Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rutolo. I'm also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everyone to the program today. I'm really excited about having Lolly Weeks on. Lolly is also known as Fortuitous Housewife. She's a writer, a blogger, photographer, social media marketing consultant, website designer. She's an ADHD parent mentor. She's an aspiring ADHD coach. And the most important job of all, she's the parent of two young boys, ages 8 and 10, who have ADHD. So I want everyone to know that they can call in, and I'm sure you will, to ask Lolly questions. The number is 917-889-7025. So without further ado, let's bring Lolly on the program. Hi,
hello.
Lolly. Hi.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, and hi to everybody out there who's listening, or maybe listening.
Oh, I'm sure there's
future.
A lot of people that are listening. I think we're going to have a lot of phone calls today. So listen,
I
wanted to
fun.
Have. Oh, it's going to be great. I wanted to ask you if you would start off the program, because I think you have a very interesting story of your childhood and adolescent years, and what led you up to diagnosing, basically, yourself through the book Driven to Distraction. So would you do that for everybody?
Oh, sure. Well, much like yourself, Justine, we grew up in the dark ages of pre-ADHD.
Yeah.
It was there. They
yeah.
just didn't have a name for it. And also, I think we would refer to it as twice exceptional. I was also... back in the day, back in California, where I grew up, where you're at, you know, they gave
yes.
IQ tests when you were finishing up kindergarten.
Wow.
And I did well. You know, I'm very verbal. And, of course, if you're giving an IQ test to a pre-reader, it's all verbal and, you know, puzzles and whatnot. And I did really well.
Right.
But I did really poorly in school. You know, very classic. I used to say I wasn't physically hyperactive, you know, the bouncing foot, the tapping finger, whatever. But, you know, I wasn't like a boy, you know, they always describe, you know, jumping off of chairs and what climbing everything. But I definitely have, as one of my friends who's a psychologist says, yes, but you have a hyperactive brain, my dear. And, you know, very verbal. So I was always, you know, being shown out into the hallway, for disrupting the class. I still remember my second grade teacher and her very pointy fingernails that she, I think, took great pleasure in digging into your armpit as she showed you out, out to sit outside the classroom. So, you know, I really
terrible.
Struggled every year. You know, the report cards were always, you know, very bright, doesn't classic, doesn't try hard enough, could do so much better if she applied herself. And frequently in the early elementary years, you know, there was counsel to my parents to hold me back. While I meanwhile
yeah.
was, you know, participating in, you know, gifted classes. Back then there was a budget. They'd pull you out of class for these special gifted classes, or there were special classes after school. You know, so I was participating in things, you know, at the planetarium and the La Brea Tar Pits. But they're telling my parents, you know, but we really should hold her back, you know, because she's just not doing the work. You know, she's not learning.
Right.
I didn't even care to take a test. I was like, why do I have to take a test? You know, and I just sit there and just put anything down. And my parents every year would say, you're not holding her back. She's, you know, she's going to be bored. And so the benchmark was, well, we just don't think that IQ test was right. And so my parents would be like, fine, test her again. And so I think probably through until the end of fourth grade, every spring, they put me through the ringer again, you know, basically telling the kid, we know you're not that smart. and we're going to prove it to your parents, and you're going to, you know, repeat a grade. And every year I'd do the same, and they'd move me along. So, you know, that's what happened to a lot of us. You know, they just didn't know what to do with us.
Right.
I had parents, much like Joe Newman was saying recently on your show, you know, I had parents who, I'm adopted as well. And luckily I had very academically gifted parents, very, very bright parents who, you know, after a few disappointments academically, just always said, do your best, you know, and you can do anything you set your mind to.
That's great.
They never, you know, they were always very, I knew they were disappointed, but they were always, you know, empowering in that way.
Wow.
And they always
That's great.
Yeah, other things for me. That was the way things were then. You know, I often say, I refer to the little Lolly, you know, she's still, you know, somewhere inside me. And, you know, all those little wounds are still there. They're pretty easy to, you know, tap into. That little girl who just didn't understand, you know, why. You know, why
yeah.
I was different.
Yeah.
You know, she's still there.
Of course.
But that's no fault of anybody's, you know. And, you know, she and I now peacefully coexist. But, you know, it was tough. Every year, you know, the night before school, I would lay in bed so excited. I had all of my notebooks organized and my pencils sharpened. I was so excited because every year, this is the year. This is the year that I'm going to I'm going to set my mind to it, and I'm going to show everybody. I'm going to do it. I want to do it. I want to get good grades. I want to just do what everybody tells me I'm capable of doing. And I would start off, you know, that first night I couldn't go to sleep. I just was dying to get to school. But, you know, that ability to, you know, stick with it, to do what needed to be done, you know, lasted maybe a week or two, depending on the teacher, maybe a little longer, maybe a little shorter. But I really did. I struggled all through elementary school and middle school. Middle school was really tough years for me. High school started off tough, but I had a couple of English teachers who somehow managed to get me to write a few things, and they realized, oh, wait a minute, she's a good writer. You know, I always loved when there was an assignment, even in elementary school, where it was like, write about, you know, your fantasy perfect world or whatever. And I'd get very hyper-focused on those kind of creative things. So, but luckily those English teachers, my freshman and sophomore year, they saw something, and God bless them, they reached out, and, you know, they were people I could turn to, and that really started turning it around. And then by the end of my sophomore year, I was seeing better grades. My grades were improving. Those two teachers, you know, stayed really mentors for me throughout high school. And, you know, by the end of, you know, my junior year, I had finally actually made honor roll. You know, finished up high school, getting into college. You know, I was admitted to the college I hoped to go to on a probationary. And, you know, the letter said, based on the improvement, you know, over your high school career. And that they gave me, again, somebody gave me a chance. And,
I read something in your history that I was wondering if you'd be comfortable sharing, because I know you and I talked last week, and I know that you understand that I believe that addiction begins with ADD. And I think it was so powerful, the story that you told about self-medicating and how you were able to stop just turning around and seeing the kids you were with. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, growing up in California in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s, self-medicating opportunities were readily available. And you know, I've told this story to many parents that I've talked with who are really scared to medicate their child.
Right.
You know, they hear amphetamine, controlled substance, and they do justifiably really, really worry.
Right.
And I've said to people, you want to see what unmedicated ADHD does? You know, our brains seek out something, anything to stimulate and at the same time soothe, you know.
Yes.
And that started for me in seventh grade. It was, you know, at that time in that era, it was available and it was easy. And, you know, I finally, these two teachers and starting to get better grades, you know, I kind of woke up about the middle of my sophomore year and was like, oh, you know, look at these, you know, look at what the path I'm on, the people that I'm on this path with. And I just really realized kind of in an instant, like, this is not where I want to be. You know, I was, you know, at parties.
I think it's amazing that you were able to do that
at
that age. I really do. I think it's amazing.
I don't know what happened. You know, I honestly don't. It's, you know, divine intervention, whatever your belief system is. Something just clicked and said, hey, this is a bad path you're on. And I honestly, and I said, told you this, and if somebody had asked me years ago, before I understood more about ADHD and what we'll do if we're not supported with what we need, whatever that may be, you know, we'll seek out negative supports.
Yep.
And, you know, I would have told someone that in my youth I was an addict because, you know,
mm-hmm.
And the reality is now I realize, well, no, it wasn't that so much as my brain was going so fast. I needed something
mm-hmm.
to calm my brain.
Yeah.
And because if that had been the case, I wouldn't have been sitting at a party one Saturday night and looked around me and said, I don't want to keep on this road. I got to get off.
Right. Right.
You know, and so I see,
right.
you know, I think that we do, you know, those dopamine levels in our brain, you know, they're looking for something to stimulate them there. And, you know, it may be that it's meditation and exercise or it's diet and sleep, and medication may factor into that or not, but
mm-hmm.
unsupported ADHD, it's a rough road. And so
yeah.
I kind of feel like my, you know, that's the thing that really drives me now is that I see parents struggling and I see kids struggling, and it just breaks my heart because I
yeah.
know how that kid is feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that little
very difficult thing to watch.
Oh, it literally brings me to tears. I, you know,
mm-hmm.
just when I see somebody struggling and hear of, you know, a parent who just isn't buying it or refuses to just, I always say to parents that I talk with, all I beg you to do is keep your mind open
right.
to all the various supports and resources, because you love your child. No one knows them better than you do. But when your kid gets the right combination of supports, they're the only person who knows their brain. And when they get the right
yeah.
combination, we go, oh, I mean, it, you know, it's stunning when you finally go, oh, that's what it's like
right.
to not, you know, have this high speed. I use the analogy when I first started taking ADD medication and my husband was trying to really be supportive and understand, you know, why, you know, and he asked me one day, he said, well, why are you taking medication? What does it do? And I said, well, the analogy I always use is a radio, and we're all bebopping down the road of life, you know, listening to 96.5
mm-hmm.
and we're listening to the same tune. And then when you find the right combination of treatments, whether it's exercise, medication, for me, it was finding the right medication. I said, all of a sudden I realized that I'd been listening to 96.5 my whole life, but everybody else was listening to 96.7.
Right. Yeah.
And so I could hear the song, But my world was full of all this static and all this noise. And everybody else was just two clicks over and had that station dialed in, you know, all the way. I always think of the old AM radios, you know, where you dial it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is. It's like all of a sudden you go, oh, that was my normal, but that's not the
right.
normal that everybody else is talking about.
Right.
So, yeah. So, you know, I always say to parents, just stay open, because when your
mm-hmm.
kid gets the right thing, they'll tell you. They know. You know, you just know in some core. And if you give them the dialogue and the vocabulary to understand themselves, to understand what they're working with, then they'll have the vocabulary also to tell you how they're feeling.
Right.
So
you got into blogging. Was it related to ADHD, the blogging, when you started?
I had two little boys. We had moved, and I had been working for a little community newspaper. And when we moved to Boston, there was a lot of upheaval in the journalism area here. Boston Globe was being sold and whatnot. So there just weren't a lot of opportunities for me to have that outlet. And I was continuing to write and shoot and do things with just no place to put it. And a lot of my friends kept saying, oh, you should start a blog. You should start a blog. And of course, my response was, ha! I'm not going to start something that I will abandon in a week. You know, I don't want any, I've got two babies to feed and a husband. I do not need to create one more thing that needs to be fed, you know? And so it took a couple of years, and then I finally launched it. And definitely one of the motivations was to share my own experience.
Right.
You know, living with ADHD. I used to say to people, I write about parenting with ADHD, not to ADHD,
right.
Which, of course, has changed over the last couple of years. But for the first 2 years of my blog, I blogged about recipes and menu planning and, you know, crafting with my boys and going on hikes. And I would touch on, you know, oh, this has been a bad week. My ADHD is really raging out of control. But I never really wrote about it head on. I felt like, oh, I really need to read all these books, and I've got to get up on all the latest science and what's new in the ADHD world. You know, I really felt like I had to do all the studying before I wrote anything about it. And then finally, a friend of mine who was also a blogger, Cynthia, if you're out there, you know, she finally said to me one day, she gave me a swift kick in the virtual pants over FaceTime and said, excuse me, you already are an expert. You're an expert in your own experience, and there's no one who can tell you not to write about that. And we got off the FaceTime chat, and I sat up until like 2:33 in the morning writing my first like real ADHD
wow.
post, which I summarily sent to her and said, thanks a lot, lady. I've gotten no sleep now, but I hope you're happy. and that was really a turning point, though. I started to, you know, listen to, you know, as ADDers, we have stacks and stacks and stacks of wonderful, amazing books by amazing minds about our brains. And, you know, how many of us have actually read them?
Right.
So thank God for, you know, podcasts like yours and many others and webinars. We can get so much amazing information, you know, while we're on the treadmill at the gym, you know, or riding our bikes, getting our dopamine boost and learning, you know. So, you know, but then I just really started sharing more about it, you know, just very open.
Did you get a lot of response from people? With your blog?
It was interesting. I got responses, but what really started to happen was friends, both locally and afar, would call me or stop me on the playground when they were all of a sudden, you know, Joey's teacher called and we think maybe we should evaluate. And people knew that I had grown up this way and started reaching out to me about their children and their experiences. And, you know, I would say, I'd have friends call me and say, oh, my friend, you know, Mary, she's just totally freaking out. Would you talk to her? And, you know, I'm always, you know, I've always wanted to make sure that us little ADDers are getting what we need. So I was always like, yeah, I'll have coffee. I'll get on the phone and, you know, just tell them, you know, like, it's okay. Your kid's not broken. This is not a life-altering diagnosis. It can be, but it doesn't have to be, you know? And, you know, just really hearing just their pain, their fear, their total and complete overwhelm, you know, because you go on Google and you Google ADHD and you get like 46 million hits. You go on and, you know, and you can narrow the search, raising children with ADHD. Okay, that narrows it down to 38 million. you know, you go on Amazon and we have so many amazing, you know, people contributing to, you know, our bookshelves. But if you go on Amazon and you Google, you know, and you search for, you know, books on raising ADHD kids, it's like 32,000 hits.
It's amazing.
And how do you know which book to buy? And how much time, you know, you're dealing with children being tested and dealing with the teachers and praying that your kids start doing better in school and feeling better about themselves. And how many books do I have time to read, you know?
Right, right.
So, you know, I always was really happy to, you know, point people in, you know, a couple of, you know, specific directions and that kind of thing. And so it kind of grew out of that.
So tell me something, because I think this is important for people to hear. How do you handle your little boy's ADHD with them?
Well, they were, my younger one, who's 8 and a half, almost 9 now, he was always the rule follower. That everyone loved to have him in his class, their class or whatever. He's so helpful. He always helps so-and-so put the crayons away. He always does what he's asked. You know, he was just the, you know, kindergarten and preschool, kindergarten, first grade. And then all of a sudden, second grade, the first month of school, every other day, I was getting an email from the art teacher, from the, you know, a call from his teacher, another email from the music teacher. And I was like, what is going on? And it was like he had just, like, been possessed, you know. He had totally fallen off the rails. And Chris and I, you know, my husband and I, we were like, what is going on? And I used to always say, he's not my ADDer. My older boy, he came out of the womb, started talking, and I was like, oh, hello, fast brain, I know you. But my younger son, I was like, no, at least I only have one ADDer to deal with. I'll never have to worry about Brody. And here he was falling apart. And I went into his teacher and, you know, I said, listen, I am not one of those parents who thinks their child's perfect. You know, they're not. Mine are not.
Right.
By any means, ever. And I said, but please go talk to his kindergarten and his first grade teacher. And I think that they will paint a very different picture for you. And I think that maybe we need to pursue evaluation.
Okay.
You know, he was having some trouble with reading, but this behavior, you know, and there was some discussion with the administration. Oh, well, we're going to refer him to the behavioral committee, and they'll make recommendations, you know, for behavior modification in the classroom. And I was like, no. And I, luckily, being that I am now, was at that point, you know, the beginning of last year, already pretty well immersed in our community. I knew what my rights were. And I just said to the you know, administrator on the other end of the phone, I know my rights. You cannot deny me. The teacher supports that this should be done. Do it. And the person actually said back to me, so let me just make sure I'm understanding you. You are demanding your legal rights to have your son evaluated. I said, gotcha. You know, but it took that. How sad is that?
Right.
And I hear so many parents who they're still struggling because last year, you know, they got turned away, you know, and I'm like, you know, if the teacher and the parent both think, let's figure out what's going on here, don't get turned away. If your heart is saying something is not right, bang on that door, you kick that door down, you have a legal right to these services.
So let me ask you something, because in the state of California, and I believe it's all over the country, because my sister, who is in Virginia, she has her master's in special ed. Her and I have talked about this. But what I have clients do is put in writing to the school that they want their child tested.
In Massachusetts, it's very, very clearly articulated. You know, the teacher went and talked to the appropriate person. I sent them an email, you know, detailing, you know, our observations and why we felt that this was necessary at the time. Oh, it was all in writing. And that was all
I just wanted
to
make sure that we were, because I know that if you put it in writing, they have 15 days to answer you, 60 days to finish all the testing. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. I just wanted
to
make sure.
I still had to get on the phone and say to someone, I know my legal rights.
Right.
You cannot deny me.
Right.
Do it. But I hear parents over and over again who, you know, Sam's been struggling all last year and it's still the same way this year and I just don't know what to do. And I'll be like, well, you know, have you had him evaluated to see maybe and maybe talk to someone outside, you know, but have him evaluated through the schools too. And they'll be like, oh, well, I talked to them, but they said, you know, he's doing fine in his classwork. So, you know, they just didn't see a need. And I'm like, hello, you know, what do you want him to do? Burst into flames? You know, so that just kills me to hear that.
Right.
Because you
have
a kid who every day is struggling.
Yes, and I think that this is important for everybody to know that's listening. I'm sure you know this, but I'm just going to say it. When a school tells you that, no, you can't have a 504 plan because your child is doing well, that is not the answer. The Disabilities Act of 1978, which was revamped in 1992, states everyone with any kind of disability, whether physical or mental, is entitled to accommodations. And so that's the fight back pushback.
I'm
I don't want to use fight.
Right
the
now.
Pushback.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, and I've said to a couple of parents, listen, they're not going to ostracize you or your child because you refuse to be, you know, shushed.
Right.
You are
right.
Your best child's best advocate, and get your mama bear, your papa bear attitude out. If they're not responding, don't let it go. Don't let them brush you off. But, you know, so we got Brody, you know, evaluated, and much to my surprise, he came back with combined type ADHD, which we had also had some evaluations done by another outside party to confirm that. And you know what, when we got that diagnosis, I mean, we're really open parents, you know, and I've always been really, really open with my boys. Like, mommy's brain is spinning way too fast. I need you to go play with the Legos so that I can slow down, you know. And I've always been, you know, really open, like, you know, oh, I'm sorry that you're at school in pajamas today and pajama day is next Monday. You know, ADD moment. Sorry, baby. Mommy will bring you clothes. You know, mommy will bring you clothes. You going into class. I'll be back with clothes. You know, but I've always just like, just own it. You know, there's no shame. There's there's no reason to just be like, yeah, well, there you go. So when Brody was diagnosed, we got a really fun picture book, and I can't remember the whole title, but it's Mrs. Smith, I think I have wiggle fidgets. And it's about a little boy who really struggles in class and can't sit still. I found it on Amazon. He, working with his parents and his teacher, he finally writes a letter to his teacher trying to explain how he feels. And it's not ADD specific, but it's a great conduit, you know, and so we just sat down and we were like, hey, dude. And, you know, because they are growing up with me and I'm so open about it, Brody was just like, oh, I have a fast brain. Okay. And it
That's
was just
great.
So very matter of fact and like, all right, whatever, good. All right, can I go now?
That's awesome.
You know, but that's really what we focus. And then when my older son, we were participating in some research studies. And so he's, you know, academically just, you know, he's does really, really well. He's endlessly curious, loves learning, loves school. So it really hadn't been any problem. I knew it was
right
there. But he'd had great teachers who'd like, okay, Jackson, you need to go sit down, who'd also made accommodations for him in the classroom, like, okay, hey, Jackson, why don't you go over in that corner behind the shelf? It's nice and quiet. You can do your work there. And empowered him to start learning, like, okay, I need to remove myself to a quiet place.
Wow.
So he had learned a lot of things from a couple of great, great teachers that he had had, you know, that figured out, hey, when it's time to write, you know, what I did this summer, Jackson does a lot better doing it on the computer. You know, getting the ideas down on paper with a pencil, he does better if he can type it up, you know.
Wow.
So just little things like that. So, but when we were participating in some of these studies, I had an opportunity, because we're so lucky to be here close to Mass General Hospital, where a lot of research goes on. And we've done some stuff with them because I say, you know, hey, guys, it's an opportunity for us to contribute to our community's science and maybe help other, you know, other people. And so I had an opportunity for Jackson to be evaluated, and it was really funny because, you know, it was a very targeted evaluation. We weren't looking for any comorbidities or, you know, learning disabilities. And after about 20 minutes of, you know, sitting with the clinician and Jackson and Brody and myself, the gentleman turned to Jackson and he goes, so Jackson, very serious and, you know, very empathetic, so you have ADHD? And Jackson goes, yes, with a big fist pump. And the doctor turns to me and he's like, wow, I've been in practice a while and I've never had that reaction. And I said, well, he was starting to feel a little left out. You know, now he's part of the tribe.
That's great.
I try to use very positive, I try to just focus on, you know, you have a fast brain. You know, Brody loves to tell people I have a fast brain with a bad steering wheel. And I keep saying to him, no, Dr. Hollowell's analogy is a fast brain with bad brakes. He's like, no, I have bad steering. I said, okay, you've got bad steering, buddy. And, you know, just that's been a great opportunity for me to also teach the boys about, like, these are your uniquenesses. And, you know, somebody in your class, I may happen to know, and I may be at liberty or not, to share, you know, well, you know, so-and-so might have Asperger's, or they might have anxiety. And so try to always look, you know, when you're talking too much, you hope that your friends look beyond that and see you, not just that maybe you're talking too much or you're distracted or whatever. So it's been a great opportunity to also teach them about, you know, empathy and reaching out to other people, trying to see beyond just the superficial. So I just really try and keep it positive and inclusive. And it was funny, at the beginning of this school year, Brody's teacher stopped me to tell me how they had it like a circle time at the beginning of the school year. And she wanted each of them to say three things that maybe their classmates didn't know about them. You know, and it was, you know, baseball, tacos, pizza, whatever. And she says, and Brody rattles off like three or four things. And in the middle of it's, oh, and I have a fast brain. It's called ADHD. If you ever wanted to know about it, I can tell you all about it. And then, oh, and I like tacos. You know, just, she said it was so completely innocent, matter of fact, open, no nothing. And I was like, well, that's what I'm going for. I feel like they can be ambassadors for all those people that, you know, there's so many adults and parents who feel like they have to hide the ADHD.
Yes.
And I know that for some people that it's just too scary to put themselves out there or to put their child out there for fear of rejection or, you know, whatever. So I always say to people, you know, I feel like it's my job. You know, I'm comfortable owning it. I'm comfortable being out there. My children, you know, I always tell them, you know, I wouldn't tell somebody. They know I'm here. They know I'm talking tonight. They know they'll come up. But I always tell them, I'm not going to tell somebody. It's your story to tell unless you tell me it's okay. You know.
That's great.
It's not the only thing that defines you. You have all kinds of qualities, but it's just one of them, and you should never be ashamed of it or that you like baseball, you know?
Tell me something. In Boston, how are the schools, and are they receptive to this and 504 plans, and are they open to having parents come in and have them talk about what they're seeing with their kids? How does that process work?
It really varies, and because, you know, I just started last month a parent support group, because there are a couple in the Boston metro area, but Boston metro area is pretty vast and traffic is pretty horrendous. So the more I met more and more parents who were like, oh, I would love to be able to, you know, now with all the privacy and things, people that, you know, they're all in their own little silos, you know, and unless you just happen upon someone who says, oh yeah, my kid too, or whatever, you feel really alone and really isolated. So it was great. We started last month. We had 16 parents come.
Great.
I was really prepared for it. I didn't know, you know, would they be really shy? Would they be really reluctant to share? What, you know, and everybody, I also really hammered that, you know, we need to make this a safe place, you know, privacy and things. And people were so forthcoming and so open.
Great.
And it was interesting because it really broadened my perspective on what people's experiences have been with the school and the various schools. And it runs the gamut, I think, just like it does any place. It depends on the school. It depends on the teacher, the administrators. You know, there are legal rights and things, but it varies. It really varies widely. And I mean, I've heard, you know, I know of parents who've taken their children to private schools because they just didn't feel like their child was getting what they needed. I've heard other people who are having great experiences. So it really depends. Brody has a 504, and I applied for one for Jackson, and it was denied.
Wow.
Because he is not having any problems accessing the curriculum. And so I'm in the process
of... That is not the basis of the 504 plan. Yeah.
I know. So, but it was interesting. I had a great conference with one of the teachers. And she said, unfortunately, you know, and I think it's true all over the country, too many school systems are still working on a deficit model.
Yeah.
You know, if there isn't anything wrong, if they are within the, you know, if they are within the bell curve academically, we don't have to do anything.
Right. But you know what? I have to tell you, and this is the thing that really, like you, I get very set off. It sets me off when I see these children struggling. So anytime I have this pushback, I go to SELPA. So it's Southeast Learning Problems or Issues, and they oversee, you'll know this because you lived here, all the schools in the South Bay. Okay, so Hermosa Beach, Redondo. Okay.
Yeah.
So anytime I have this issue, I go to them. They're wonderful, incredible people. They're state. So, and they have attorneys that work for them that go in as mediators. And they'll go in with me if I have this issue. And lo and behold, the minute they walk in, we get the 504 plan. So, I mean, that's just ridiculous, you know. I mean, I think it's great that they're there. Don't get me wrong. But why do we need to go to that length to get the child what they need?
You don't ever want to put somebody out of a job, and it is great that you have that resource. But on the other hand, wouldn't it be nice if you didn't need them at all?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, so frustrating. Yeah.
And basically, the only Jackson does great in school, but he's had these teachers who just organically have allowed him certain accommodations, certain, you know, offered up ideas and strategies for him. And, you know, I just wanted, basically, really, I'd like a 504 so that his teacher this year has a bigger piece of paper to write down the things that have worked well for him in class.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, that's all.
I agree.
I just want documentation. And, you know,
right.
And the response was that, well, you know, next year when he goes to sixth grade, they have all these great resources. It'll be fine. He'll be fine. And I'm like, and kind of the point that I need to make with them is I'm not talking about just next year. I'm talking about
mm-hmm.
his sophomore year when he has a very stubborn, set in their ways, social studies teacher who says, no,
mm-hmm.
you will write it down, the midterm, in a blue book with a pencil, period, end of sentence. And I want to be able to walk in and say, hi, I'm sorry, but Jackson has an accommodation to utilize technology in this state, in this, you know, in this situation. He's legally protected for that, so he can retake the test on a computer now. Thank you. You know, that's
right.
Really what I'm looking at is it's not next year. It might be 4 years down the road, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, but, yeah, you do. It's really, truly a shame that parents have to fight so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to get their kids
It really
heard.
Is. Yeah. You know, and the other piece of the 504 plan as well is for, you know, time accommodations on SAT, ACT. That has to start
right.
very early because they won't allow it if it starts like sophomore year. You're not going to get it.
Exactly.
You have to do that earlier. So there's
and
the
like
other piece
have,
of it.
You know, we have the standardized testing and those types
yeah.
of things. You know, they're right now they're in the process of evaluating some new testings. But, you know, I'm looking at those things because once he gets into high school, those are standardized tests that will impact,
mm-hmm.
you know, his academic future going forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't, so anyway, we're dealing with that. But then I talked to another parent at a different school who, when her son was diagnosed with ADHD, the head of special ed at that school said, so what do you want, an IEP or a 504?
What?
And I literally almost, you know, sprayed my coffee, you know, across the room because I was like, what, they gave you the option?
Wow.
They said, what do you want? Yeah. And so, I mean, I think it really does run that spectrum. And, you know,
wow.
Their attitude was, Jackson's doing great in school. Why does he need a 504?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But that's the thing that I know when things went off the rail with Brody, and I live in this world now. At that point, I was really, you know, immersed in it. I'd been to the ADA conference and, you know, met all these wonderful people in our tribe and in our community. And when things went off the rails with Brody, I went from, you know, proud, powerful, knowledgeable ADD-er to panic, stressed out parent.
Yeah.
And once
yeah.
we, you know, got to the other side, I stopped and I said to Chris, I said, holy cow, I was freaking out and I know what I'm dealing with.
Right.
You know, I've been driving this car for, you know, decades.
Right.
I can't even fathom how a parent who isn't in this world must feel.
It's terrible.
And parents have told me, like, you know, they open the computer, they start trying to do research, and they just close it. And they're like, I just shut down. I don't even know where to start. I don't know where to go, what to do. And so that's really become those two experiences, working with some of these parents, and then my own experience, I realized there is still a big canyon between
yeah.
parents who are all of a sudden, they feel like they're looking down, you know, a precipice, you know, down into this horrible, you know, chasm. And, you know, we're all over on the other side of the canyon waving, going, hey, we're over here. This is your new tribe. These are the people you need. And so that's really become my passion, is to help parents find, you know, I talk to parents and they're like, what's Attitude Magazine? You know, and it's just, they're
so
not,
sad.
No one's giving them that information. They're not getting that information from their pediatrician. No. Maybe they get it from a psychiatrist, but most of the psychiatrists that I hear them think they're focused on the treatment, you know, getting them
Right.
the right medication or whatever they might need. And nobody's saying, hey, by the way, just down the road, if you take that off ramp, there's this incredible community of,
Right.
you know, individuals, coaches, therapists, you know, advocates who are all waiting to welcome you in and give you great support and advice and just, you know, welcome you. And so that's
yeah.
really become my passion is to
Which is great.
help parents find Miss ADD or Attitude Magazine's
right.
podcast, you know.
Right.
And just start listening. You know, and
yeah,
and
I
then
think,
start
I,
meeting and
I think that's a big part of the answer too, is the listening part too is very helpful, because I know when my older son is 28 now, when he was diagnosed at 7, and then I got diagnosed right after him, but I remember like trying to figure this out. It turned out somebody in my family, of course, my you know, had ADHD. So I knew a little bit, but that's all. I mean, I didn't know a lot. So
mm-hmm.
I had to do a lot of research, and there was nothing out there at that point in time to really look
yeah.
to
20
for help.
Years ago?
And
yeah, no.
It was very, yeah, it was very difficult. So, yeah, I mean, I know how that felt, and that's why it's so great that we're all out there trying to help people understand that we're there for them, right? You're there for them, which is great. You have this parent support group, which is phenomenal. And it's so important to be able to have them have this ability to understand step-by-step instructions of what to do and have a venue to talk.
And I'm working on a new website that'll, you know, you'll be able to access through my Fortuitous Housewife. But
okay.
really working on something that'll be very curated
okay.
with a lot of, you know, kind of a hub and spoke. Boston is frequently known as the hub. so I hope to launch something that will be kind of be a hub for parents to, you know, if you go on Attitude Magazine, and great publication, so much information. Too much information. If you go on and just go 504 versus, you know, IEP, there's hundreds of articles that they've published.
Right.
And sometimes it's hard to find. I need the bullet point. I need the, you know, 504 and IEP for dummies, you know, outline.
Right.
So, and then here are some links to if this is what you're dealing with, this is a great article, or this is what you're dealing with, you know, so I'm really looking forward to, I've started working on that now, and I hope to have that launched in the fall or early winter.
Oh, that's great.
But just again, to add to what the, what are my, you know, what I'm hearing in our parents group, what we're sharing and what questions people have.
Right.
And
it's great. You have the parents, you know, just coming together, the husband and the wife and the father and the mother. And it's just, it's really important that they are both on the same page as much as they can be, you know, because
yeah.
sometimes, yeah, yeah. Sometimes
well, and much
it can
like
be
yourself,
difficult.
Your son was diagnosed and then you subsequently were. And,
yeah.
You know, I joke with people sometimes. I'm like, so you're an undiagnosed ADHD parent who's suddenly confronting all of this information and things you should research and things you should learn about and things you need to find out about. And if you've got ADD yourself and you're undiagnosed, you know, as I joke with
right.
people, I'm like, you know, the ADHD apple does not spontaneously appear on your horizon. There's a tree.
Exactly. Right.
There's a tree and it might be
yeah.
you.
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so that just adds another level of difficulty for a parent who's trying to do the very best for their kid. So, but yeah, it's
not
exciting.
Is not knowing that they have ADHD?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, there's a whole nother level. I have a friend who that's, you know, kind of the scenario, and, you know, they're trying to now, like, how do I, okay, professional organizer, coach, you know, they're trying to find their way with this new information about themselves while they're also trying to do the best they can for their child, you know?
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot. It is overwhelming.
And it's overwhelming. It could be overwhelming. Yeah.
And then you have people who will come along and be like, yeah.
I think that just admitting, you know, that going out there, I went out and got diagnosed because when I saw my son, I'm thinking to myself, wait a second, this was absolutely me when I was his age.
Yeah.
So there has to be something here. And I know it's genetic. I've heard it's genetic. So I went and got myself diagnosed, and I absolutely had ADHD on steroids. Mm-hmm. I was very hyper and impulsive. And it really helped a lot because, you know, I used to have a lot of fun with my kids growing up because at times I would give them – I'd wake them up in the morning and say, okay, guys, you have a mental health day today. We're going to breakfast. You're not going to school. All your missing assignments we're going to work on together today. Come on, let's be real.
Mm.
It's missing assignments all over the place. And they really appreciated that because I wasn't judging them about that.
Right.
Because I did it myself. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think if you can approach it from that standpoint with your kids, and if you don't have it, you have to learn go as much as you can about it, going to your group, going to other people's groups, finding, going to Chad, listening to people talk, reading books,
mm-hmm.
finding out as much as you can. Because it's so important
for your
kids.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's so true. We ADDers, all humans are their own worst critic. But
right.
if you want to hear, like, the worst critic ever, like, you don't need to point out to an ADDer what they've done wrong. Because they know exactly what they've done wrong, and they have been beating themselves up over it ceaselessly for the last 5 hours.
Yeah.
So nothing you could say could possibly, you know, you don't need to compound it. Trust me, we've already beaten ourselves up about it, you know. What
right.
you can
right.
do is soothe and comfort and redirect and give support.
Right.
You know, well, how can, like, just like you said, well, how can we get all those assignments done? Well, let's take a mental health day and, you know, bang
right.
them out together.
Yeah.
You know, we ADDers love a little body doubling. We do that every afternoon. We've done that since Jackson and Brody started having homework. You know, play date, you know, come home from school, play date, snack, whatever. And then it was time to sit down. And we still, to this day, sit down at the dining room table, the three of us, and I might be, you know, finishing up a blog post or reading an article or, you know, registering
right.
for baseball or whatever. And they're sitting at the table doing their homework. And it's
perfect.
So funny because
that's
when
so
we started
great.
Doing that, it wasn't intentional at that time. It was just the only way that I could keep the two of them sitting at the table. And now I'm like, oh, that's a coaching technique. You know, pat myself on the back. I didn't even know I was doing that. Very good.
Yeah,
now
great.
I realize that I've been using that in subtle ways my whole life, you know.
Right.
But it's funny as you learn those little tricks. But it drives me nuts, though, when you hear parents who don't tell their kids. Do you run into that?
Oh, I know. Yes, yes. They tell me before
great.
The kids come in, don't say anything about it. Well, what would you
–
so, okay, why are they here?
It shatters me. I talked to someone, a parent, and their child was struggling socially. And I said, well, have you, like, talked to some of his friends' parents? Well, he doesn't really have any friends. I'm like, well, what about a few of the parents, you know, in your neighborhood who have kids the same age? You know, and talk to them about, you know, and how does he feel about his diagnosis? Oh, well, he doesn't know, and we wouldn't want to share that with anyone. We don't want him to be stigmatized.
Oh, my God.
That was the moment when I took my, you know, I've got all my filters running. I'm trying to be very diplomatic, and I just, I was like, okay, all bets are off. And I just turned to him and I said, okay, I'm just going to be really, really frank and honest with you. I don't care if they're five. If they've gone off the rails, they know they're different. And they are already,
yeah.
even if they don't have the vocabulary to ask the questions or express how they're feeling, I was that five-year-old, and I can tell you they know they're different. They think they're bad. They think
yeah.
everyone is disappointed in them. And the only
yeah.
way that you can bring them back from that is to tell them, hey, this is what's going on, and we're going to get you on track. But we know, even if nobody tells us, we know that there's something, quote unquote, wrong with us. And
yeah.
you give us liberty
no.
and freedom and strength when you say, no, this is what's going on.
Right.
So, you know, how many, you see, hear that with all the adults who are getting diagnosed later in life. Finally, that's how I felt, you know, when I read Driven,
yeah.
you know, the
I
first
do too.
Edition of Driven. You know, I was like, oh my gosh. And I had the pleasure to, you know, tell Dr. Hallowell myself. I said, so one page I was elated, one page I really wanted to, like, you know, stick my head in the oven, and the next page I wanted to beat you with the book. Because where had you been all this time? Why
right.
hadn't you come along and explained this to me 20 years before?
Right.
And then that's, you know, when I pursued my own diagnosis. But I'm like, trust me, your kid knows.
Yes.
And you set them
yes.
free. You give them their wings back when you say, you have a fast brain. And
right.
we're going to help you strengthen those breaks up. We're going to give you the glasses you need to focus. Whatever analogy
mm-hmm.
you want to do, you set them free.
Right.
And then they'll soar.
Exactly.
And they can do anything.
Yeah. No, I struggle a lot with that with parents. They don't want their kids to know about it. So, yeah. It's very frustrating. It's making it about them. Instead of making it about the kid. And see, you can't, you really can't help a child that way, because you really have to just, what you're saying is we all know, I knew, you knew when we were little kids that we were different. And it was
mm-hmm.
scary to me, because back in the Stone Age, they had no idea about ADHD. And it was very frightening to me, because I remember looking around at a very young age and seeing all these kids that were, I was in elementary school, I went to Catholic school for 8 years with the same kids, and they were all doing well, you know, not all of them, but
mm-hmm.
the majority. And here I was, and I knew I was smart, but I just wasn't
yeah.
getting the grades. So, you know, just being able to help them understand that is powerful. It's very powerful.
And you know, there's so much, and certainly so much of life is based on, you know, what you achieve and how you show, you know, what you can do, whether it's, you know, at work or in school. But I think it's also important to say, you know, you may not get great grades on your math test, but, you know, look at
right.
your English test,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what can we do to help you with the math? But, you know, it's, we know. And I was going to say, I my childhood was really, really lonely, because flat out, I was a blabbermouth. And, you know, I just was, I always had tons of ideas. I was always running in 15 different directions and never stopped talking. And quite honestly, I don't blame half the kids, because they were just like, oh my God, she's exhausting. But on the, you know,
yeah.
and I used to joke when I got a little older, yeah, I know, I'm a small doses person sometimes. You know, you just can only take small doses of me, and then you got to go, you know, catch your breath. But so it was lonely. I meet people and they're like, oh, well, my best friend since I was four. And I'm like, what? You know, it was very lonely. And so my
yeah.
friends, and I'm blessed that I have some amazing friends from my high school days
wow.
who, you know, we're still very close. But, you know, those first couple of years at high school, I knew them, but we weren't really close. It wasn't until I kind of turned a corner. But, you know, that's why I so value my friends today, because they put up with me. They don't get exhausted. You know, they understand that, you know, if I forget to get them the recipe that they wanted for the Super Bowl party, Well, it's kind of back on you because I told you to remind me. You know, it's Monday. Please remind me if I don't get it to you by Thursday. You won't be pestering me. You'll be doing me a favor because when I see you 2 months from now and you say, wow, I really could have used that, you know, chicken wing recipe for my Super Bowl party, but you never got it to me like you promised, you might as well just stick me with a knife because I will feel awful for the next month.
Yeah.
Call me on Thursday and say, hey, I'm going to sit on the phone with you while you go to your computer and send email it to me. You are doing me a huge favor. I love you.
Yeah.
I will kiss you and thank you every day because I feel awful if I forget to do things that I tell people, you know, oh, I'll get that to you or I'll do that. Please circle back, you know, help a gal out.
Right. And so think about the kids who forget to do their homework and then hand it in. You think they really want to do that? They don't. I can honestly tell you, and I have kids in my office all the time who will tell me, I don't care. And I say, yeah, you do. I know you do. And then they say, yeah, I do. You know, because they have to defend whatever it is that they're doing. And it's just so sad because as parents, we have the opportunity to really make this better for them. We really do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember the teacher coming around to collect everybody's papers, you know, and I'd be sitting there like, and, you know, that look that they'd give you.
Yeah.
You know, oh, she doesn't have her homework again, you know. And, but, you know, but I think if I had understood and we had some understanding of ADHD when you and I were kids, I think socially things would have been better too, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, and then that's the other piece of this, too, is, you know, I don't know how your boys, I'm sure you sounds to me like your boys are great socially, they have friends, but there's a lot of kids out there, and whether it's ADHD on the high on the spectrum, whether it's ADHD inattentive, and they're just, you know, they're too busy thinking about the creative stuff, or it's the autistic spectrum, these are kids that just, friends, it's not happening, you know, and so...
Yeah.
As parents, it's our job to make this happen. It really is. Because they can't be, if they isolate, that's one of the worst things that can happen.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, like Jackson is very, very blessed to have some amazing, amazing friends. But I'll see sometimes a kid, you know, like they'll start butting heads or something, and Jackson will be complaining to me, and I'll be like, so did you actually let them, you know, say what they wanted to do or what they thought, you know, the answer was or, you know, and he'll look at me like, Mom, 10-year-old boys aren't like that. And I'm like, dude, I was a 10-year-old ADD-er and that overrides gender, you know. and I'll just point out, I'm like, I know that there were plenty of kids who probably are like, I wish you would shut up so I could say what I want to say. And Jackson is full of ideas and energy and enthusiasm. And I'm like, but you have to remember, you got to let people say their piece too. You got to, you know. And so that, I think, is my biggest concern or goal is not
right.
I don't want to see them grow up lonely.
No. And they won't because they have you as a mom. They won't.
But if you know... You know, so I just always try and share with them. And listen, I still, you know, how many people, you do a show once a week for 90 minutes.
Right.
With great, with grace and articulate and insightful. And you have people
on
who can talk for 90 minutes. And, you know, my friends were like, oh, well, you won't have any trouble talking for 90 minutes. And I was like, yeah, thanks. You know.
So funny. I love it.
But there are times, you know, when we had our first parents group meeting, I sometimes have to sit, especially if I'm nervous, you know, the motor mouth will really get going. And, you know, I'll sit in meetings and I literally have to internally coach myself.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Somebody will say something and I'll be like, oh, yes. And I want to share something with them, you know, and I literally, there's, you know, an alter ego pulling the reins going, nope, you know, or we'll say, Lolly, you've been talking too much. You need to let somebody else talk. be quiet, you know, and that might be over lunch or in a meeting or something, but I still have to like literally consciously sometimes say to myself, time to be quiet, time to listen.
Yeah.
You know, listening was a skill I took, it took a long time for me to learn, you know, to actively listen.
Well, I think
listen.
Part of that too, Lolly, is, and I told you when we spoke the other day that one of the things that I work on the show is just trying to stay quiet when you're talking, when somebody else is talking. Because my husband will get on me when I get off and he'll say, nah, it wasn't too good today. You know, because I don't want people to think that I'm not listening to them. So it's kind of like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's great. But the other thing is what I learned with mindfulness and meditation is that the reason I was talking so much is because I was afraid when somebody else was talking and I'd interrupt that I was going to forget what I was going to say. And then with mindfulness,
absolutely.
Yes, in listening to people now and being in the moment and being very mindful, I can remember what it is that I'm getting ready to say. So it's not important to interrupt them.
I hadn't thought about that. I think anyone who's lived or grew up in California, we've all dabbled with meditation, you know.
Yeah.
I've known about meditation since I was, you know, in second grade. you know, it's funny now because, you know, I'll recommend it to, you know, parents or to friends with ADHD. Well, you know, have you tried any, you know, mindfulness type of practice? And, you know, I think you were talking with John Rady about that the other, you know, that it might be knitting, it might be coloring. By the way, I think I commented on Facebook, but, you know, I've been knitting and coloring and yoga for years. So I must have been doing something.
See?
But I started.
It helps.
I started, but, you know, meditation just always, that whole sit and your mind needs to be blank. Oh, please. That is just
but you know what, though? I have to say this to you. I know there's a lot of people that say, oh, please. I was on steroids, hyper and impulsive. And 8 years ago when I started this and somebody told me I was going to do this, I was like, you're out of your mind. This is not happening.
But
I was open enough to it at the time because I was going through some difficult times and I needed an alternative. And I started doing it, and I've been doing it now for 8 years, and I can tell you that when your mind is empty for even a minute during the day, it's a peace like nothing else you've ever felt. It's
absolutely
amazing.
And I think that's why I'm so thrilled that there's this conversation kind of separating a mindfulness practice versus meditation, because I think people do think that like they're going to, you know, go to the commune in India and, you know, have their eat, pray, love moment and sit and meditate for 3 hours. And I loved Liz Gilbert's internal dialogue in that section of the book because I just found it so relatable, you know, well, my nose is itching. Well, what about this? You know, and fighting to keep the thoughts out. And I think that it's wonderful now that there's this focus on, okay, the mindfulness practice may take you to that blank mind. But, you know, it's more about the thoughts will come.
Mm-hmm.
Just teaching yourself not to engage them. Just
to
let
and
them
you don't resist them
by.
Either. You don't resist them.
Yeah.
Because as they come up, mindfulness teaches you don't resist thought. So thought comes up, you let it come up, but you don't engage, you let it be, and you refocus back onto the breath, or you refocus onto whatever you're doing. Like I say probably 25, 30 times a day, that's a fascinating thought, but I am not engaging in that thought, because right now I'm doing this. So, yes, mindfulness and meditation, they do go hand in hand, but mindfulness you can do takes work, and that's what I tell people all the time. It takes work. It's not an easy thing to get used to doing. But once you get hold of it, it's incredible how it can change your life.
And I don't know if you're familiar with Dan Harris. He's the ABC anchor.
Oh, yes,
and he's actually from Brookline, Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And he was experiencing anxiety attacks, which then led to him spending a year kind of on a spiritual journey. And then he wrote his book, 10% Happier.
I've heard about this. This is incredible.
Great,
yes.
Great book. And then he launched a great app, which I got involved using when he first launched it, which, gosh, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, maybe a little longer. But it's all structured around mindfulness practice for the fidgety.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off, the first initial stage is 14 days. And
yeah.
over those 14 days, you start off with a 5-minute practice.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a little video. They have a kind of a Q&A video, Dan, with you know, different yoga practitioners, experts. And then there's, after the short video, there's a 5-minute guided, you know, mindfulness practice. And then you
right.
build up through the – and – but, you know, I think that people have this idea that you have to sit down for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
No. You know, like I meditate laying down with my feet at a 90-degree angle, my legs in a 90-degree angle up in the air. You'd think I was nuts. You know, everybody
sounds
says,
like
okay,
fun.
Sit in a comfortable position. I'm telling you, people, lay on the ground, put your legs up, and if you find just the right balance point where your feet are literally completely stacked on top of your hips, you can lay there for 20 minutes.
Wow.
And, but that just the, it, for me, I find it to be just enough sensory stimulation
right.
that I can stay engaged. If I'm having trouble
right.
getting the balance point, then I'll scoop my tush up against the wall and rest my legs up against the wall. But it takes all that pressure to find a comfortable sitting position that you can hold.
Right.
But it is. I think people think they have to sit in this crazy
no.
position
you can
for
also
30
walk
minutes.
And do meditation. You can do walking
yeah,
meditation. And I drive and meditate.
And
don't close my eyes.
Yeah.
But I aware meditation is aware of being aware. That's all. And
yeah.
so out here in California, it can be very dangerous, as you know, on the roads. And
okay.
so I'm very aware, and I meditate when I drive. I mean, it's really awesome because I stay very calm. Because you know how easy
mm-hmm.
it can be to
now
get
the
upset. The
4, 5, and the 10 can drive you right over the edge.
Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, yeah. no, and so I just tell people, I'm like, literally find a guided meditation app, mindfulness app.
Right.
I loved, and I still do it. He's now expanded. He's bringing in more programs. You know, I kind of, you know, have been a part of it since the beginning, and he's bringing in more programs, you know, eating, fitness, you know, things. But it all comes down to just, and I think I personally like taking that, you know, now I do about 20 minutes a day. It's a time where I say, I'm doing this now.
Mm-hmm.
And that also then feeds into later on when Alan Brown starts chiming in my hair, are you doing, you know, with his thing about, you know, is this what you're supposed to be doing? I forget what his exact verbiage is, but I always
right.
laugh because I have some snarky guy in the back of my head going, that's not what we're supposed to be doing now, is it? Is that what you, you know, but it does give you that power to have that moment where you kind of take a half step back from yourself and go, I'm not supposed to be doing that right now, you
right.
know. But it is. I think it's a really powerful tool that I hope more people can access, you know, and going
really
for
is.
A 5-minute walk may be enough.
There's a guy,
like you said,
there's a guy out here called Noah Levine. It's Noah
mm-hmm.
Levine.
Yeah.
And he actually started Dharma Punks, which is, a franchise, but he also started Against the Stream up in San Francisco. And for those of you who want really powerful guided meditations, go to againstthestream.com. He does Dharma teaching,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing, and he does guided meditations on loving kindness
oh.
and forgiveness, which is what we all need in our lives every day, and he's amazing. And the most interesting story
oh,
about
it.
Him is that he was in prison, and this is where he, and I guarantee you he's ADHD because his partner in crime, Vinny Ferraro, is very ADHD. But he was in prison, and he developed a meditation practice while in prison, and it just completely changed his life. So he's a great story as well. It's somebody that I like to listen to a lot. I actually went and did one of his sits for 4 hours back in October, and it was amazing. It was just incredible. So for anybody who's interested in just different types, he's a whole different type of meditation, but just a powerful guy. He really is.
And that's what I think is so amazing with so many. I probably have 6 or 8 different, you know, mindfulness, calm, a variety of, because sometimes I bounce around, you know, depending on what's going on in my life or things. But I use it with, you know, my kids. And like you were saying, you know, we have a deck of cards called Yoga Pretzel. And they're like these big, colorful cards. And we will, when they were younger in particular, you know, we would, I'd be like, grab some cards. You know, if everybody was really squirrely in the morning, I'd be like, grab some cards. Let's do some yoga, you know, or walk to school, you know. You know, it just helps with that transition. You know, if we can walk to school, and I know some parents will be, are like, yeah, but, you know, we live so far away or whatever, and I have to drive them this, you know, fine, park 3 blocks away and walk the last 3 blocks, you know. You know, and I've talked with the boys' teachers over the years, you know, like, hey, how was today compared to, you know, yesterday? And it does. It helps with the transition, you know, walking in the door at the beginning of the day to just, you know, do some downward facing dog and some rag doll, walk a block to school, just to, you know, kind of ease that transition, you know, into the school morning. Because unfortunately, kids don't get any exercise in the morning. I wish that every school had like a PE program in the morning.
Well, you heard Dr. Rady and I talking about that last week. I mean,
I was applauding
really
important parents who organized that at our school. Like they have a jump rope club one morning a week. They have another fitness thing, but it's all parent done. And I'm like, God, it would be so great if we could have it every morning, because I think
that would be great.
The kids would just be, you know, they would mentally be so much more ready for their day.
They'll turn their brain on.
The other day was really, I felt like I wanted every school administrator, teacher, you know, to listen to this, you know, because I think it's so important. And Jackson and Brody's kindergarten teacher, in the morning, she would have the little TV in the corner of her room playing kids' yoga videos. And, you know, they could have a little free time. They could go read. They could go in the play area. And Jackson and Brody always gravitated to doing the yoga. And I thought that was so just something she'd always done. She's now retired. And I'm like, why doesn't every teacher do that? You know, just do a couple of downward facing dogs and ragdoll, get the blood pumping to your brain, and your whole morning will be different.
Yeah. Look, remember years ago, I don't know if you had this, but every morning we had to pledge allegiance to the flag, right? So why can't we do that with kids? And, you know, okay, if they've taken that out, I don't know. But what about jumping jacks or downward facing dog or something for 5 minutes? That's it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's such a small, it's one of those things where, oh, but we have so much to cover. You'll cover more, take 5 minutes to get kids' blood flowing, their brains engaged. You'll cover more, I guarantee you, in your curriculum that day, taking those 5 minutes to do it, than struggling, you know, all day.
Absolutely.
I'm not a teacher, but I do firmly believe that I do it myself all the time. You know, I have timers and, you know, my Fitbit goes off and it's like, okay, I have to get up and, you know, go walk the dog or something, you know, throughout the day to give myself physical, you know, mental breaks.
Yes, which is absolutely important. That's so great that you're doing that. Listen, I want to ask you because I just want to ask you, can you tell everybody who's listening, if they're up in your area, how to get in touch with you for this parent group?
Well, the parent group has a closed group on Facebook. Is the Needham ADHD Parents. You can go there and request membership.
Okay.
You know, it's Needham ADHD parents, but we welcome anyone who feels like driving to occasionally come and meet with us. We're meeting
okay.
the first Sunday of the month at 7 o'clock. And
great.
That information's shared on the Facebook page. They can always reach out to me via my website, fortuitoushousewife.com,
okay.
or Lolly at Fortuitous Housewife. Message me over Facebook, Lolly Weeks.
Okay.
So I'm everywhere. Google my name and I come up way too much. But,
That's a good thing if you're coming up way too
much.
Yeah,
well, after five and a half years of blogging, your name starts to develop its own SEO, I guess. But
I think it's great.
But I have one question for you if we have 1 minute.
Oh, we do. We have 10 minutes. I just wanted to make sure we got that in so people knew how to get in touch with you.
Please. And if you're not in the area, but you just want to talk to a mom who has ADHD and has two ADDers, please, by all means, feel free to, reach out. You can email me, message me on Facebook. You know, I love to help parents help their kids find coaches
right.
It's all good,
Yes.
But I think I want to turn the tables on you. You've had
okay.
very active support groups now. You've got
yes.
has two, and aren't you launching a third something?
Yes, I have two adult support groups through CHAD, and I'm going to launch a parent support group, but that's not going to be through CHAD. I'm going to do that on my own, and I haven't.
Yeah.
I'm going to put together a Facebook page. I haven't done that yet. I have my marketing son who's doing my marketing for me, which I really appreciate. And so he's going to launch the Facebook page, and then I'm going to try to let some of the therapists and psychiatrists in the area know what I'm doing to put this together. And I think we're going to do it at the library up in PV. We haven't really put this together completely, but there's such a need for that. And, it's interesting because a couple of years ago I tried to launch one through CHAD, and it was going well for probably a couple of months, and then the parents started to drop off, and eventually it ended up like nobody was coming. So I just said, you know what, I'm going to stop this for a while, and, we'll see where it goes, where it's heading. Now I've had other people calling me and saying, Do you know of any parent support groups? And, can you start a parent support group? So I think I'm really going to do that very soon.
Yeah, well, but I've never done anything like this. Never
it's great.
Facilitated
I'm so happy you're doing
a group. And so I think my question for you is, do you have any advice for me? We had our first meeting. I tried to just keep it really social, let everybody get to know each other. We'll have another meeting actually next Sunday. Two Sundays. But, and I think we had some parents who couldn't make it. So I think we're going to, keep things pretty social, this next meeting. But I've really said to folks and shared in our Facebook group, what are your questions? What are your struggles? Tell me so I can tap into some of the and introduce you to some of these people locally or, virtually.
That's what I was going to say is one of the things I would do is what I try to do is, Alan Brown has been to both my adult support groups, and I try to bring people into that I know that can come in that are in the area to talk. I had another psychologist come in, talk about testing for adults because these are the adult groups. But, here's the thing. Structure is important, but there's got to be a balance because they need that time to just talk to each other, because that's what's so powerful about these groups is the crosstalk and really, everybody comes up with great ideas and what they're doing. But you might want to possibly, if you know of any special ed teachers in the area, that's something else. I've had special ed teachers on my podcast. Have them come in so that they can help the parents understand, how to work the system. That's the best ones to deal with. and just bring in some experts. You know, bring in a pediatrician or a psychiatrist who you know that get to know these people. You're great at that because you have that kind of personality where you can call people up and they can't say no to you. I know that. So, you know, just get to know those people and bring them in so that people have an opportunity to talk to somebody who is an expert, and they'll do it for you. You know, get a coach.
Yeah.
Get a coach up there to come in and talk.
Well,
you know, get an organizer to come in. And believe it, believe me, you and I both know this. When your children have ADHD, it's important your house is organized and that you help your kids learn the structure. Because when my kids were growing up, I always had their room set up with their help where everything had a place. And they thank me now for that because they were able to really stay less scattered because of that. Because you and I both know when there's papers and stuff all over the place. So get organizers in and get...
I call that environmental noise that just adds to the noise in your brain. And it's funny, I had someone recently joke that they didn't think I had ADHD because I'm very... And very, you know, I'm very organized. I'm hyper organized.
Right.
Everything has its place. It always has.
Yeah. I've always been like that too.
No, no, no. I had a therapist once who said, well, organization is your soothing mechanism.
Yes.
When you can have everything organized, then your brain, you've eliminated some of those, that noise. And I joke that, you know, it's my OCD and my ADD are the yin and yang in me. I have just enough OCD to keep me organized because it knows that the ADD side needs that to function.
Yeah.
Like if there's too much on my desk, I don't know what pile to start working on. If I have too many lists, you know, I have a brain dump notebook and then I use Wunderlist. W-U-N-D-E-R list. It's a great app. You can share it, which I love.
Right.
So I can, you know, I can share it with people who are on Wunderlist. But, you know, I'm really, really organized. And it was funny because when Brody was diagnosed, one of the people we met with sat down and started to explaining to me how we were going to need to restructure our household and not how our family operated because ADD children need a lot of structure and organization. And my husband almost laughed straight out in her face because he's like, you haven't been to our house. You know, like the shoes belong on the hiking boots belong on the top rack of the shoe rack and the sneakers belong on the second rack and the cleats belong on the third, you know. They've just grown up with that.
So you can do that then.
It's
you don't
so
need
important.
To bring in an organizer. You can help.
Well, but they
all
don't
the
want
parents.
To,
see, that's
they
one
don't
of the,
want to hear
one
me
of the
spout
nights
off.
You should have planned for organization and have them ask questions about how to do this. You know, this is going to be an amazing group because you can do that and then you can have other people come in. They don't have to stay for the whole group. Have them come for 30 minutes or 45 minutes and just, you know, have people talk and then have people have a question answer period for them, you know?
Yeah.
It's really.
Do you have people come? Now, how long are your meetings generally?
So my adult meetings are an hour and a half every week. I have two of them, one-on-one.
And ours ended up being 2 hours. But do you have.
Which is, well, that's
like
once a
little...
month. See, mine is every week. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a little socializing and then people come in and then you have Q&A and
you know,
just
I usually get there
or?
A half an hour early and then people come in if they want to talk to me. If they've had a rough week, I'm there to talk to them and give them my time. We have a little bit of socializing.
Mm-hmm.
We start every meeting with meditation and then we move on to,
It's
kind of structured because I have like a 10-week program that we go through that really takes about a year to go through because, you know, with ADHD people, we get off, which is great. We talk about different things. We've got about 45 seconds left. Lolly, this is a great show. I want to thank you so much for being on, and I'd love to have you back on.
Anytime.
So when you start doing
pleasure.
Different
thank
things,
so
please
much.
Let me know, and I'll contact you and have you back on the show. thank you so much.
What you
shared with us was so informative and interesting.
Well, everybody have a great time. Feel free to reach out. And Justine, thank you so much for the chance. And you bet I'll be bugging you when the next big thing happens.
I hope so. You take care.
Absolutely.
I'll talk to you soon.
You too.
Okay.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. I want to thank everybody for listening. Lolly was great. I'm sure we're going to get her back on the show again. I want everybody tonight to just remember to stay in the moment, and we'll be back soon. Take care.